Yo, 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 what's up? This is Contramessi Shango, and you're listening to the Cup with a Podcast. Stay tuned!
Start remembering what you hear.
Well, hi out there, and welcome to...
And now, the world's foremost authority.
Welcome to the Cup with a Podcast. I'm your host, Instructora Esperta, also known as Jamie. And yes, it has been a long time since I last... did the last episode once again for the 8 millionth time. My bad. It's been really busy. I don't know. A lot of things change. I got a new, way better job. Really good adult job. I got my own place. So I've just been trying to get settled in. And now that stuff is a little bit more calmed down, I can actually start to focus on the stuff that I've already recorded and edit everything and give that to you. So it has been a crazy last few days. We had Mestre Perinalonga. We had our first ever music event where we actually had someone fly down and just, teach us music and their songs. And it was amazing. It was a week of horas and singing and playing. And I was super... I don't know, I guess I was just lucky. The first night I ended up taking the drum, and then it turns out I ended up playing the drums for Mestre Perinalonga every day, and, you know, I didn't expect that. And I don't even think atabaki is my strength in terms of the instrument, and I'm really glad that, I mean, I was kind of singled out for that. I was really privileged, and I even got to play at the Capoeira music, Capoeira Exchange, which was cool. And then during that, I actually got a lot of people coming up to be at my podcast that just discovered it right now. And everyone is just chomping at the bit for the next episode. So I really decided to just get my ass in gear today on my day off and just fucking edit it. So here it is. This episode is super old. It was taped last year. Basically, like, right before the events of my last Bachizato kicked off. This episode is with Malandro from Filhos de Bimba. He's awesome. I've known him for a long time. He and I have a really good rapport. He's come to all of our events. I really respect him. I think he's super smart, super engaging, really funny. And, you know, it's funny when I listen back to it. This is before I became an instructora. You know, it's when I didn't know what to expect that week. And then, you know, this is before before I'm an instructora. So it's funny because I talk about how, like, I don't know what it would feel like to cord, you know, people and stuff. And now that I'm, like, editing this, it's like I've actually corded several people since taping this episode, which is awesome. I really never thought that. So it just made me laugh when I was editing it. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy everything. So stay tuned.
I enjoy giving people insight about me, mm-hmm. because I get comments from, you know, people who are like, I'm very hard to read. And then also, like, people don't know much about me. Like, okay, people see me at certain events,
yeah,
and we hang out, but, like, this is a chance, you know, like, if I'm not around anymore, or just in general, for people to kind of get to know me a little bit better, and, like, okay, you know, he went through this struggle, or, you know, he's a real human being, and he feels this way about this, just so that they get to know me a little bit better.
Yeah.
So I'm all for it. My name is Ricky Lawson II. I'm known in the capoeira world as Malandro, and I'm a professor de capoeira, which means I teach capoeira, and I've been doing capoeira for 18 years.
God, I love your real name. You sound like a member from New Edition.
Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike. Yeah.
So this is what, your third time in Pasadena?
Pasadena, yeah. I believe so.
Are you excited about this year? I don't know, just being at this Bachizato. Is it
Like, do you like Bocciusados in general, like coming, or is it...
I enjoy Capoeira
events. Is it always a different feeling or a different energy when you go to different schools?
Yeah, each place is different. They have their own they have their own energy, because New York is crazy. But, yeah, I enjoy Capoeira events, but I enjoy events with, like, people who I consider, like, family, mm-hmm. you know? So, there's been times where, you know, I came to L.A. and I was just hanging out with my family, like my uncle and my cousin, and I needed a place to crash. So I just, like, called Muitu. I was like, hey, can I just, like, crash on your couch, you know, for the day? So, yeah, no problem, come through. So, and everyone who's in charge of each school, let's say for Pasadena and Contemesi Muitu Temple, we have a mutual respect, admiration for what the other person does very well,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the experiences that they've gained over their lifetime and their capoeira path. You know, we really respect that, and we learn from one another. So it's always good, and that's why also Contemesi Muitu Temple was saying, like, oh, you know, this time around it's going to be smaller, might not have that much money to, you know, pay you. It's just like, but, you know, if you're going to have the event, I'll be there.
Yeah.
It was a similar thing with Juneteenth. Like, you know, the whole event is, like, donation-based
mm-hmm.
For participants. And, you know, whatever people donate, that's what I'm able to, like, kind of compensate the teachers. And they're like, no, it's all good. Whatever you can do, it's fine, because it's more about, like, being there and helping each other.
When was the first time you went to L.A.? Do you remember that? The first time you were in L.A. for an event?
No. I mean, it was a long time ago. I think Muitu still had his dreads. But I think it was San Diego, as far back as I can remember. First, it was San Diego.
Like, where that you had to go to San Diego? That you
that
were...
we that I, you know, caravaned with other capoeiristas that were, that I was training with in the school, and we went to San Diego. I think that was the first one.
Were you a professor?
No. It was like a yellow belt.
Oh, wow. Were you, like, early 20s?
Definitely. Because, yeah, I moved out here to the Bay. Moved out to California when I was, like, 19, 2000.
So, I think were you born in Detroit?
No, I was born in Inglewood.
You're born in Inglewood. Mm-hmm. How did you get to Michigan?
Because the majority of my family is there. So, mm-hmm. when my parents split, both of them are from Detroit. When my parents split, my mom just moved back to Detroit, because that's also, like, where her support system,
right,
you know, was. So, yeah. So, I was raised in Detroit. And then when I was 19, then I moved to the Bay Area in Oakland.
Okay. When did you start capoeira? And how did you find it?
Started capoeira in Detroit. And I found it because I was in the martial arts period.
Mm-hmm.
And I would collect these black belt magazines. And in the black belt magazines, they always had, like, stuff that you could, like, purchase. And I would, like, make little stars and marks. Like, okay, when I get enough money, I'm going to purchase this punching bag or these video series. But I never did buy anything. one of the magazines in the back of it had an advertisement for this Brazil Capoeira camp in California. So, I don't know what possessed me to call the number. I was thinking, like, oh, maybe I can go to this camp. Never took a capoeira class before. Mm-hmm. I knew about capoeira because it was, like, Only the Strong and then Tekken 3. But at the time, you know, my dad was staying in Southern Cal, so I was like, oh, maybe I can go here and stay with my dad and then go to this camp.
How old were you at that time?
Probably, like, 15, 16.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. But again, like, I'm calling this number to see about going to another state for a camp in a martial art that I've never done before. So I called the number from my mom's basement, because I figured if she didn't see me make the call, then she wouldn't know I was calling long distance. And they asked me, like, oh, where are you calling from? And I was just like, oh, I'm calling from Detroit. And I was like, oh, we have somebody out there that teaches. We can give you this information when we send you, like, the little pamphlet about the camp. So they did that, called the guy up. And he was like, yeah, I teach capoeira. He was the only person officially that was teaching at that time.
What year was that?
That was 97. Oh. 97.
What city was he teaching in, like Ann Arbor or something?
No, it was Detroit. It was two locations, like the YMCA. One was in Detroit, okay. And I think there was another YMCA in Livonia.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay.
But, yeah, Detroit. That's where I started.
So you never went to that camp?
I went to the camp, but not until 2 years later, like 99.
So you ended up training with the guy in Detroit first, mm-hmm. and then going to the camp?
Yes.
What style did you start off with? What school was that?
Started off with Capoeira Mandinga. Mm-hmm. And I guess like this, the easiest term is like contemporary or contemporanea, mm-hmm. which just is a mixture of, you know, Angola, Regional, and then also like what's ever popular, because like contemporary also like borrows stuff from Asian martial arts or breakdancing or things like that and just incorporates it into capoeira. I was with Mandinga, Capoeira Mandinga, for about 11 years, a little bit over that, because even in Detroit that was a branch mm-hmm. of Mandinga. And then I moved out to California to train with the maestro of the school in 2000. So about 12, 13 years of training with Capoeira Mandinga, and then like 11 years of training under a maestro, like officially.
Even though like you're in East Coast Mandinga and then you moved to California, was there a difference in styles of Mandinga in Detroit as opposed to Mandinga in California?
Well, I wouldn't say a difference in style, just kind of like a difference in quality. Because the guy who was teaching at the time, you know, didn't know, he wasn't that experienced in capoeira, you know. We learned how to play the beating bows and all that stuff before he did. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a total difference with like a student running classes and a maestro running classes. So, yeah, in California, it was under a maestro, so the quality was different.
Was it coincidental that you moved to California, or did you want to become a teacher and then you decided to move to California?
No, I moved to California to train capoeira. That was my mm-hmm. purpose. Like, but not, I didn't have the idea like, oh, I'm going to become a teacher, run my mm-hmm. own thing. It's just like, I'm going to move there to train capoeira. And that was it, 19 years old.
When did you figure that out, like realize that at that moment? Like, what moment was that?
Probably when I went to California in 99 for my first bachizado, and I got my green cord, the first cord. It's like, yeah, I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to pack my stuff up and move to California.
How did that feel? Like, were you going to California at all to visit family or?
Yeah, but I would visit my dad, my mm-hmm. sister, and I would go visit him and his family there in Southern California every now and then, like during the summers. Sometimes it would be like for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was totally separate from like capoeira.
Right.
And I didn't start capoeira until much, much, much later on. Mm-hmm. You know? And with style, or what I learned, what I took from Capoeira Mandinga, since, you know, I'm saying that because I'm not with the school anymore, is just kind of the exposure to different methodologies, different ways of playing capoeira, different philosophies, different personalities. Mm-hmm. I think that exposure was really invaluable.
I feel like capoeira, there's definitely like a base that every school has in terms of like, yes, movement, jinga, but is there some sort of what philosophies that sets Mandinga apart from other schools, or something that you've always, that I feel like you've, you got from Mandinga, but you've maybe never heard from any other school?
Not so much that it isn't present in another school, because Mandinga is a offshoot of Cordal de Ouro. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a inspiration from Master Suasuna, who's the mm-hmm. headmaster of Cordal de Ouro. So one of the quotes that, you know, was on the website is like, oh, are we with Capoeira Mandinga? Are we Angola or are we Regional? And It's like we're the other kind. We just play capoeira.
Right.
You know, which was cool to think about. Like, oh, we play whatever the beating bao calls for. And that's kind of like the Cor de Ouro mind state, Suassuna's philosophy. And that also went into Mestre Marcelo, who's the leader of Capoeira Mandinga, and kind of had that mind state. It's like the best method is a mixture of methods.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of take that idea of just being flexible, exposing yourself to different things, different ways of doing, but also like trying out different things as well.
With martial arts, I feel like, you know, martial arts in general, it's like discipline and working hard and stuff like that. Is that what you kind of kept when you were growing up with capoeira in terms of Michigan and then when you decided to move to California?
Mm-hmm.
Like, were you growing up with it? Like, would you hang out with your friends and you say, oh, I have training, I can't? Or were your friends in capoeira already?
Because
I think it's interesting when teens grow up with it, because I didn't grow up with it. I started in my mid-20s, so
mm-hmm.
it was different.
Yeah. I was always into martial arts, like watching it and definitely watching martial art movies. And when I started capoeira, you know, I would bring some of my friends to come try it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would do like a few classes here and there, but I was the only one that like stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they knew already that, oh, you guys are going to go hang out. I'm going to go to capoeira class and then I'll be back. You know, it was like 3 times a week.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just kind of stuck with it. But I always brought friends to class to come and try it out.
What age were you when you moved to California?
19.
You were 19.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to college or anything, or it was?
I did back in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I went to U of D Mercy, but I didn't finish. And then also did a little bit of time at Detroit College of Business. But both times it's just like, man, I'd rather be doing capoeira.
Yeah.
You know?
Everybody, we all look young, so like, doesn't matter. Like,
I look so good.
Yeah.
No, I'm in my mid 30s, 35 to be exact.
I mean, as coming from your 20s, like even from, you know, your teens into your 20s into your 30s, like, how do you think your attitude has changed? Because I'm sure, like, when you were young, even when I was young, it was just fun, like playing and even almost fighting, and then.
Yeah.
And then I noticed, like, depending on the way you feel or whatever you're going through, like, that's what your game is going through. And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, there's
it's
a lot
personal
of...
personal expression.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, can you remember, like, these gaps of times where you were playing in a certain way?
I don't want to say playing in a certain way, because I feel like when I'm really playing capoeira, then it's just, like, freedom, like, not, I don't want to say like an out of body experience, but almost like trance like
mm-hmm.
That I feel, where I'm not even thinking about the movements, you know, they just happen. So I don't think there's any difference there. Maybe, you know, quality of movements through like repetition and more training. I think just my attitude in and out of capoeira is different, because younger, you want to do everything, prove yourself, show what you can do, show off. And then, you know, as I got older, then it's just like, okay, I want to improve in this movement or improve in this this counter and things like that, or want to be able to play with these types of people if it's a tough game. And then now it's just more self-control.
Mm-hmm.
Like more relaxed. Like I've received and given, you know, movements, and I know the damage that I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So just choosing when to let go and execute, you know, those movements while having a conversation with someone is like how it evolves from, you know, teens to 20s to 30s
mm-hmm.
for me. And, you know, they say, oh, you know, college isn't for everyone. But I gave it a shot to see if this was
mm-hmm.
for me. And I just feel like it was the right decision for me, because I was following what eventually became my passion. I didn't know it was that at the moment, but I just felt like that's what I wanted to do all the time.
When did you, like, realize it was going to become your passion? Because even now I think about it, like, I've been doing it for 12 years, and I just feel like my head's just been down, and then I look up, and I'm like, oh, my God. It's, yeah. like, more than 10 years.
Where did the time go?
Yeah.
Man, probably when I had my first feedback, because, like, to actually focus and think about it, it's like, you know, maybe it was, like, this situation, or mm-hmm. maybe it was a piece of, like, this situation where it started to get into it. But I think just it eventually grew into my passion when I noticed how many people's lives I was impacting, you know, mm-hmm. Especially kids. I started my own kids class when I was working, to this day I still work there, but Head Over Heels Gymnastics, which I give credit to the company that actually taught me how to teach, instead of sometimes what generally happens in capoeira is like, oh, you've been training for a certain amount of time, so now I want you to, you know, sub this class or just, you know, take over these classes for a little bit, which is okay if we're talking about just imitation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, I'm going to do these movements. I want you guys to imitate what I'm doing or imitate this drill, and then that's it. But to actually have someone understand and incorporate a movement, songs, things like that, it's that's actual teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I give a lot of that credit to Head Over Heels Gymnastics. And I started my first kids class there. And, yeah, like I said, just seeing how certain people were being positively impacted with what I was doing as far as capoeira was concerned. But I knew for a fact that I just, like, wanted to keep doing this until the very, very, very end. Yeah.
In terms of, I know that you're with a new school now, but in terms of Manjinga, what do you think are some, like, trademark movements that Manjinga, like, what do you think, like, when you see someone from Manjinga as opposed to someone from, let's say, like, my school or, like, Capoeira Brazil, like, if you were to, like, just based on Jinga alone, like, what do you think are some things that you were taught, like, as the basis for Manjinga?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to answer that from the point of view of my time.
Yes,
because I also feel like now it's different.
It's evolved.
I wouldn't use that term, but it's different because during my time, there were a lot of us training, like, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
A group of us that were really motivated. We traveled all the time mm-hmm. to other schools, particularly me, Shango, Biringela, and then also like a handful of others, but they're not doing capoeira anymore. But in those times we were doing like 500 kicks and then go to class,
mm-hmm.
Really, you know, pushing ourselves and training really hard. A bunch of us went to Brazil together, you know, multiple times, and I don't see kind of like that same quality
anymore. Nowadays.
That drive from the students to like go travel, you know, which is fine because everyone does capoeira for different reasons. But at that era, it was a really strong core group of students training on their own,
mm-hmm.
Or on their own, like together outside of class. So the movements that I'll say that kind of represent Manjinga are a lot of the movements that are present in the general Cordão de Ouro style. A lot of the Mujiu movements, because at first there wasn't any kind of distinction from us and Manjinga, and Cordão de Ouro. So a lot of the back bendy stuff and hand spins and combinations and things like that. But what Mestre Marcelo used to really emphasize is like expression. expression of movement, over exaggerating, elongating everything. So that was kind of the quote-unquote kind of representation of managing, like, the staple movements. It was like just having a lot of expression.
Right. I know at some point, because I remember when I was a young court, I remember seeing you when you were from Manjinga. I think it was like the early, I don't know, like 2000 something. I've been in it for a while too. But I, and then when you were, and then when you came to Pasadena, you were under Filos Dibimba. So how long were you in Manjinga exactly?
From 97 until 2011. Yeah.
Like, what was the moment that made you want to go to Filos Dibimba in Tejanal?
There was a time when I just wanted to research the history and the connection, the roots of Capoeira Regional and Capoeira Angola. So, I lived in Brazil for a year. Trained with Mestre Nenel and Filos Dibimba, trained with a lot of Capoeira Angola Mestres. But in particular, I like Mestre Jogo de Dentro's style of Angola. So I would use that as my Capoeira Angola reference. And after I decided to leave the school, leave Capoeira Manjinga at the end of 2011 and start anew in 2012, I had my own group, you know. It was my own kind of expression, my own representation of Capoeira, my own Capoeira group name, starting in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't Regional at that moment. But then...
Was it like a breakoff of Manjinga?
Yeah, the name of the group was called Manjinga de Escravos. And I took that from a quote from Mestre Pachinha when he was talking about Capoeira Angola. He said Capoeira Angola is the mother, the sorcery of the slaves. So since Capoeira is a representation of the manifestation of the Africans being enslaved, then I kind of took that and used that phrase and had Manjinga de Escravos. And even in the logo, there was a connection to all the kind of the different representation of Capoeira with, like, Contemporânea, with Regional, with Angola, and things like that. And Mestre Nenel, who I brought a few times, even when I was still Capoeira Manjinga, he would help me, or he would give me feedback on the logo that I was creating for my own group.
Right.
You know, like, oh, you know, if you put this, then if you go to certain countries, you know, they have, like, really strong religious ties, and that might be difficult to get into the country.
Oh, wow.
You know, about the Regional Solomon star. And then there was another thing with Besouro.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a beetle on there. And then the beetle, kind of like the Black Widow, where the Black Widow has kind of like that hourglass.
Mm-hmm.
Tattoo, so to speak. Then it was a beetle, but the beetle had a wooden knife kind of signal on him, and he kind of gave me the rundown that, you know, Besouro wasn't particularly a capoeirista.
Mm-hmm.
He was a faquista, which is like someone who's really good with knives.
Because
also in that era, if you were just any troublemaker on the street was just considered a capoeirista, you know. So if you and I just happened to get into a fight, not knowing capoeira, we get arrested and then just termed like, oh, these are capoeiristas, just troublemakers. So yeah, but to answer your question of when I wanted to decide, when I decided to actually join them was when I tore my Achilles the day before the workshops were going to start with Mestre Nenel.
Oh, wow.
At Carnival in San Francisco. Like, I never went to Carnival before. And this one time, I was like, okay, I'm going to help out my friend and do a performance. And I was doing, you know, flips on the street. And then just one time when I was doing a flip, this Achilles popped. So got some crutches and then, like, came back to the house where Mestre Nenel was. And he just was, like, hanging out on the porch. And he saw me just, like, limp up. And he just, like, threw his hands up, like, shrugged, like, okay, what is this? So from that moment on, you know, I just got to see the workshops through different eyes because I was on the outside, or just on the side, just like recording, and he was teaching. And before, you know, if I was, you know, uninjured, I would like be leading the class or, you know, just be at the forefront. And then I just got to see how he works with my students.
And how did he work with your students as opposed to how you would work with them?
I mean, it's similar, you know, teacher, student, just seeing how he split the class up, you know, worked with different levels, different personalities, you know, like this person believing that they can do it, this person thinking that maybe this movement is too hard. And just seeing him work with people also who don't speak his language, you know, because my students at the time didn't know much Portuguese, and he doesn't, Messina doesn't speak much English either. So seeing, like, okay, they have that language barrier, but how can they, like, still connect and understand each other doing doing the capoeira and also the other manifestations like Puxada de Hedge, Makulele, so on and so forth. And I got to interact with Messina now instead of, like, teacher-student, just, like, man-to-man kind of thing. And after that, you know, those 10 days and he went back to Brazil, that's when I kind of realized, like, I felt like Phyllis Jibimba was the right fit for me and everything that I wanted as far as capoeira, as far as self-defense, being a martial art, having a connection to kind of like the African roots that are in Brazil. I just felt a better connection with everything that he was representing, especially his work with his father, you know, and me growing up single-parent household, feeling like, you know, I'm carrying on a legacy or doing right by someone from my past. Like, that sort of feeling I was kind of longing for and felt like it was a good fit.
Were you scared when you were like, I want to change, I think I want to change over schools, or?
No, because just like I feel like in any relationship that you have, you know it's over before you actually say that it's over, you know? So, for a while, you know, just meditating on it and just, like, thinking, maybe this is not the best place for me, maybe it's not the best place for me.
Like, so, I wonder, like, yeah, how do you, after that, after you kind of, like, mentally confirm that, do you kind of, like, make some sort of a list, like, okay, I have to change this, and no more pants, and, you know, like, how do you actually, how did you go about that?
Just when I felt like it was going to be over and done, then first things first, just like, okay, I'm going to make a logo. What's the new name going to be? And then just kind of go from there, because when you have your... I knew that I was going to have my own school, you know, at that point of doing capoeira for so long and teaching and things like that. Because I already had my own students. A lot of them are with me, you know, still doing capoeira to this day. So that was the first thing, like, okay, what is going to be the representation of your capoeira at that point? So once I decided that, then the rest was just like, okay, you just got to have that quick meeting, or not quick meeting, you got to have that meeting and then just kind of bring closure to things and go from there.
Were your students, how did they feel when you said, like, oh, I mean, how do you even go about that by saying, we're not going to be this school, we're going to be this school?
It was a delicate situation, but there were situations that already happened with my students being treated a certain way. Not because they were my students, but just because that's how the person that was running the school runs things, and it's just like my way or the highway, even though I, meaning the teacher or the master, depends on the students, you know, for their support and things like that. So they're already kind of exposed to it. So when I was like, hey, you know, now we're going to be called this, it was like, okay. You know, because I was always in communication with my students and let them know how, like, how things are going and what the vision is for the school. And each year, okay, this is what we're going to do to move forward and be more productive. So they were fine with it. Even when we became part of Phyllis Jibimba, you know, they were fine with it because They had already met Messina Nail twice, mm-hmm. and he had been with us for 10 days at a time.
Right.
So they already kind of felt like they knew.
There's a bond. And
yeah. Just a connection with someone. Right. Just like, oh, we're just going to be called this now with some random person that they've never seen before.
So in terms of that, so now your style is Hejanel. So
Not my style, the school.
I'm sorry, the school. Mm-hmm. Was it hard to kind of transition into the movement, or is the movement, would you say, is still the same?
It was difficult, you know, to have that same vision mm-hmm. in the game. Because, you know, in Capoeira Regional, there are principles. So, for example, play close to your partner. And I was used to, you know, contracting and expanding, like mm-hmm. me and my partner come close, and then there's some space, and then we do some movements, and then come close, and then back and forth.
A part of me wonders, is that a conscious decision as capoeiristas? I feel like we always do that.
Mm-hmm. It happens. It happens where, like, you contract and expand, mm-hmm. but I feel like the vision was very different, where it's like, okay, if I spin on my head, then you spin on your head. If I hold a handstand, you hold a handstand.
Right.
And again, that kind of contradicts the principles in Hejanel, which is like every movement needs to have an objective.
Mm-hmm.
Play close to your partner. Keep one base, meaning the hand and foot, in contact with the floor. You know, so I just had to adjust playing a certain way, which was a challenge because my capoeira had to be more aware of what the other person was doing because they're not going to waste movement.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, even when, like, you know, Angoletos, for example, Joji Dentro, the person who I really admire in his capoeira Angola, there's not a lot of wasted movement,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's a similar thing. So there are some schools who have similar principles or they play in that similar way, but they just don't have it, like, officially, like, up on the board or in
right.
writing and stuff like that. So that was a big challenge. Like, oh, you know, there's space. It was a big challenge for me, playing with that vision with other people who don't have the vision. When I'm in Brazil playing with them, it's easier for me to do that because that's how everyone is like
right,
responding.
Yeah.
But, you know, now I'm playing and then this person like does a hand spin or like a no hand cartwheel. It's like, okay, I'm not going to do that.
It's funny because like whenever I see you come here for Bachizado, it's like you guys just do capoeira and then we hang and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you do when you're not doing capoeira, or do you feel like you're always training?
When I'm not doing capoeira, I'm playing video games, I'm watching movies, eating, or cracking jokes.
What does it feel like? Like, it sounds weird because I don't know if I'll ever get to that level where I'll get to play students, but
mm-hmm.
Like, how does it feel, like, going in there and just, like, playing people that you, like, kids that you don't know? Like, do you kind of just see them, like, whatever, I'm just going to play this kid? Or do you kind of size them up? I kind of just wonder, like, I've actually always wanted to know about that. Like, coming from, like, a guest standpoint.
Because
mm-hmm. I've gone to Bachizados and, I mean, I play normal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I smile and then, you know,
yeah.
I've never needed to play hard. I've never needed to really... I mean, a couple times I needed to defend myself or just kind of, like, really go a little bit more aggressive just to show, like, I know what I'm doing, you don't
right.
need to do that, but, like, that whole, like, what goes in your head when you're playing someone to give a chord to them? I'm trying to gain more insight, since I probably am going to play you on Saturday, I don't even know.
Yeah, hopefully we get a chance to play. That would be a shame if we didn't over the weekend at some point. When I'm giving a belt, it's like generally when anytime you're playing with someone, you're just observing like their body language, the quality of their movement, but also trying to like just be in the moment as well. And depending on, you kind of get cues before the hold starts, depending on which level. Okay. You know, this person has blue in their belt, so I already know what that means. Since I came, you know, from the capoeira school that uses a similar chord system. Oh, this person is green and yellow, so I know, you know, I should hold back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of what the level is, And the challenge, you know, for myself, I'm always going to play, you know, according to the principles. But sometimes when I go to events and they're like open holders, then, you know, I observe how people, not necessarily sizing them up, but I observe, you know, the person's skill level, their quality of movements, because you can tell, I mean, I feel like I can tell about the person's game by how their Jenga is, you know. So if their Jenga is kind of like not grounded, then there's not going to be, you know, kicks that are going to be grounded if the Jenga isn't grounded.
Do you ever goal set?
Oh, yeah. I'm not used to like writing things down.
Do you think that's like a new thing? I feel like it's a new thing. Like everybody's just doing shit like that now.
I'm just writing stuff down.
They'll kind of put in paper just to materialize it. So they'll do. And I've even done an episode about it of mm-hmm. even how to just construct it, like, you know, short term and then long term, and mm-hmm. then maybe something that you want to like do in a month and then a year and then 6 months.
Yeah.
As a teacher, like, are you still kind of doing that for yourself?
I don't write stuff down in that way as far as goals, as far as Capoeira is concerned. I do write down classes that I've taken, mm-hmm. you know, certain information. I do document that. And I have written down things before, like, oh, you know, I want to push myself to, you know, go running every mm-hmm. weekend, or I'm going to push myself to do this many mea luas, jicompassos, and things like that. Like, I've done that before. I feel like my goals, I just kind of say it in my head, and then I just go for it, you know. Like I did the music class today with the birimbau, and I was like, you know, I was used to playing Sambento Grande in a certain way for this many years, and then I had to change it, you know, to have it be the official, I don't want to say correct way, but if you're going to learn this rhythm that was created by this person, then I feel like to pay respect to that person, mm-hmm. I would want to play, you know, the way the person created it, the way they made the foundation, not kind of the game of telephone, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, this is my version, you know, that is another version of another version that someone taught them. You know, I want to go to the source to be respectful. Yeah, so...
Do you have goals for your students and in your school? It's funny because I think goals are so broad, especially become a teacher, because now it's like, it's not like you're, it's just for yourself. Now it's like you have kids, like mm-hmm. you have almost like these children, even though it's like probably adults and
yeah, some kids. No, it's adults and kids, but it's more general, like, oh, I want us to, you know, learn some music. As far as evaluations, it's a good teacher's guide, because with each, because there's a list of stuff on each level, mm-hmm. there's 5 levels, there's a list of movements and things that they need to learn in order to complete that evaluation and move on to the next level, next evaluation. So that's a goal, like, oh, I want this person to learn the sequencia, I want this person to start learning the cintura desprezada, so... they're going to learn these kind of basic movements and get them, you know, ready for actually being thrown, so on and so forth. So for me, it's more general, but there's specific stuff like, oh, I want to learn the song, I want to improve in this movement, and then I just, like, say it in my head or confirm it in my head and then just go for it. And then I just stick to it. Oh, I want to have a event and I want to bring these people.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just go ahead and do it. I don't necessarily, like, write it down.
Yeah, I went to Juneteenth. I was going to say, if you listen to my show, I actually edited a bunch of interviews I got from Juneteenth. You were on it. It was good.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I'm going to go back and search for the links.
what prompt? Was that the first time you've thrown, had a Juneteenth hoda?
That, this year would be the third.
It was the third. How did that come about?
To be truthful, there was inspiration that came from the Capoeira Exchange,
mm-hmm.
the idea of, you know, different schools coming together and playing Capoeira. Then being inspired by that, but then also like, okay, you know, oh, you know, we're going to play Regional, we're going to play Angola and things like that, but it was like, why not? Because we have it available in the Bay. We have people that come directly from those roots. Of, okay, I'm an Angoleto, and my master's an Angola master. Myself with, like, Heijonawan and representing that lineage, and then other people, you know, being available for contemporary and things of that sort. And then also understanding what Juneteenth is and what it represents. And I just felt it was a good idea to put all those things together, mm-hmm. you know. So I have someone who comes from an Angola school, and myself with Heijonawan, and someone from contemporary. But then with Juneteenth, having all people from African descent being in charge of the holiday, because the art form in and of itself comes from African people, you know, in Brazil, but it's part of the African diaspora. So there hasn't been anything like that, to my knowledge, any types of rodas that is like mixed schools, but they're people of African descent who are running the school, running the roda. I mean, there's like Angola schools where the majority of the students are, you know, black, and then, of course, you have like the Bateria, who's a majority black, or, you know, other contemporary schools or things like that, but nothing to this degree representing this holiday, you know, being this symbolic.
I really liked, I noticed that there were a lot of Oakland schools coming together, and, you know, it's funny, I went to a Batizado in Frisco, like, around 2009,
mm-hmm.
and I remember, like, I know, it was a long time ago, I remember we went to go get food, like, me and a couple other people from one school, and I remember they saw some other people from another school, and they kind of looked a little frazzled, and...
Yeah.
Was it just me, or were schools very separated at that time?
Yeah, earlier on, when I moved to the Bay, schools were...
Like, to each his own.
Yeah, because the Mestres themselves had their territorial beefs and things like that. So then that kind of spilled over into the students. And then as the students got more mature, they're just like, you know, it's a waste of energy.
Yeah, when do you think that happened? Like just the breaking down of the separations.
Just a slow progression over the years,
mm-hmm.
Because people would have events, and you know, it was just a progression of as we would see each other at events and just become more acquainted with each other, and just realize that it's really BS to waste time like that. Oh, I don't want you to go over here because me and so and so are having, you know, problems. Oh, you know, if so-and-so makes you buy a uniform, then I don't want you to play, not a uniform, makes you buy a t-shirt,
yeah.
Then I don't want you to play in the Hoda, you know? So, glad that's over.
My Facebook is very limited, I think, but I knew you had gone to Brazil, but I didn't know, I figured it was to learn more. Did they send you into the forest looking like that with the white jacket?
No.
That would be cool.
I'll show you what I looked like before going into
Did you wear fatigues?
I didn't.
I mean, who actually held that program?
Well, it's part of Capoeira de Heijonawan.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not something that you have to do.
Uh-huh.
It's something that
you
can choose.
Up for.
You can choose to do it.
How long was the program for?
We trained for, like, almost half a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last day we went.
You make it sound like a Navy SEAL camp where you're just like rolling in the sand and then they just like turn this hose on you.
But yeah.
Like, it was like that.
But it was, I wanted to say it was fun. This is the before we went into the forest.
It looks like one of those Outward Bound.
Mm-hmm. Some of the people were getting attacked, and then the other people were doing the attacking.
Oh, wow. So it's like you're setting up a tent, and you're just like, okay.
No tent.
Oh, there's... So you're sleeping on the floor?
No, we didn't... We woke up early that day,
uh-huh.
and took a bus to that place. Oh,
uh-huh.
We were recording.
Yeah.
So
you decided to go to this camp. What was this camp called? For anyone that wants to get attacked.
Not a camp.
You make it sound like a camp.
No, well, This is just the methodology, the rituals of Capoeira Regional. After you complete the first basic course and receive your blue scarf, then, you know, after years of training, if the master feels you're ready, and also if you want to participate, then you participate in the specialização, the first specialization course, where you learn self-defense for the streets. And these are all Capoeira resources that, you know, you can have in case you need it. And then on the final day, you go into the forest, and then you get attacked by other people. and you have to defend yourself and get from point A to point B.
Like, would you just be walking and then you'd hear a rustle?
Well, yeah, that's... When I went in, you know, the master comes, there's three masters just, like, overseeing in to make sure everything is, you know, safe and things like that. So, when master was like, okay, Malandro, you're next, because we all went to, like, alphabetical order, because there was a few of us, you know, doing the emboscada. You're next. So then I just start walking, and then just by myself, and then...
Do they have a weapon?
Well, three guys jumped out, and there was like almost like a tripod. So there's two in front, and then one kind of further back behind. So tried to get through the first two, you know, fighting two people at the same time. Funny thing was, I was able to get through them, but then when I took off running, I was ran off the trail, and they was like, "No, you're going the wrong way. You better come back." So I was like, damn it. So I turned around and had to go back and then fight some more. And I got past them eventually. And then further along the trail, like, these guys jumped out with sticks. And I ran past them, like, didn't wait to give them a chance to, like, really do any damage. And then got to the last part where, like, these two guys were just, you know, kind of in front of the exit, where they, you know, just tried to grab me and immobilize me and put me in a position to, like, have to submit. And was able to get past them, and then that was pretty much the end. And it's a training. It's not something that, you know, the people are trying to, like, really, really injure you, but it's borderline there, you know what I mean? And the main thing is just to give you, well, what I got from it is a real-world awareness of what's a real fight and what's kind of make-believe. And, you know, fighting against multiple opponents is not an easy thing to do. And that kind of just, like, it really shows you, like, okay, where's your capoeira, level of capoeira? Or even just your heart to, like, be able to kick or strike at somebody else, you know. So it was a really cool experience. Now that it's over, it was a real challenge for me mentally, because I had never gotten into any type of street fight. I've gotten into, like, you know, tussles, you know, in school,
at the club,
throwing bottles, but this was school, like, you know, middle school or high school, like, just, like, little scuffles here and there. Nothing to this, to, like, an actual street fight. And then to have to go from 0 to 100, you know, it was just real nerve-wracking on my brain, just, like,
trying. I mean, I'm trying to think. It's like, are you doing Mayaluas? Are you doing Armadas? Or are you just straight up?
No, there's, like, Benson, Martello, right? What you guys call, like, Shapa, you know, Shapa, you know, spinning Shapa. Those are the kicks that are, like, the most effective, because you're fighting against, like, other capoeiristas. These are other people who are, like, your level or advanced and of experience, and they've done this before, and they've been on the receiving end. So now they know kind of, like, what your repertoire is, and then it's more than one of them. So you're at a huge disadvantage. So, yeah, no Mayaluas were thrown.
No helicopteros.
No, none of that. No patafuzos.
If you were to change one thing in capoeira, like, if there could be, like, you can change whatever you want, like, let's just say, what do you think you would change? if you could change something.
Right. If I could change something. Wow. That's a question that I cannot immediately, like, just pop first thing that comes to my head. I feel like if I could change. I feel like if I could change the mind state of certain schools or certain people about what capoeira needs to, this need that capoeira needs to get respect from other martial arts, from other organizations, like, okay, you know, we want capoeira in the Olympics, or now we want to have these capoeira tournaments that are kind of, you know, based off like jiu-jitsu tournaments and things like that. Like, all this takes away from like the capoeira essence, where it's just like a tool for liberation, you know, personal growth. Like, if I could change that and have those same people give frequent respect to the people who suffered, and less commercialization, like less, okay, every single year I'm going to have a bachizado, which the students have to pay for, so I can just make money off these belts. And like, okay, we're going to make sure that we go into low-income neighborhoods and give capoeira, you know, for free or to, you know, at a discounted price, and give back to the community instead of like how many events I can have to like make money, you know, and pocket it. That's what I would change, because I feel like in some instances people who are in charge are using capoeira in the same way as the people who are trying to oppress, you know, the capoeiristas in the first place. You know, that's what I would change.
What,
boom.
What do you think you would want for your school within the next 30 years?
30? Woo! Okay, 30 years. Wow. All right. I would definitely want our own space that we own, that we can call home, that we can decorate and, you know, make it feel like this is our space, you know, in the world, in the community. Having a nonprofit that would help us give classes to low-income communities, low-income families, and just help pay for things that we want to do with the community. And also having a kids project set up where I myself can, you know, be available to give classes to kids, and not just classes, but I'm saying like mentoring, being a role model, showing examples of like, you know, all you have to do is, capoeira may not be your passion, but if you take what you learn in capoeira and apply it to life, then that's my main goal. Because we have a kids project, I don't want to say kids program, kids project called Capoeira in Brazil, and there's a few that are in Lebanon and other locations that we have capoeira schools, but I definitely would like that wherever I'm going to be at in 30 years, whether it's Oakland or wherever. So those three things, our own space, a nonprofit to assist with, you know, with government-assisted funds, and a capoeira project for kids and low-income communities and families where they're actually doing like mentoring and can give back and do things in their own community.
Two more questions. If you were to change one thing in capoeira, like, if there could be, like, you can change whatever you want, like, let's just say, what do you think you would change? If you could change something.
Right. If I could change something. Wow. That's a question that I cannot immediately, like, just pop first thing that comes to my head. I feel like if I could change. I feel like if I could change the mind state of certain schools or certain people about what capoeira needs to, this need that capoeira needs to get respect from other martial arts, from other organizations, like, okay, you know, we want capoeira in the Olympics, or now we want to have these, you know, capoeira tournaments that are kind of, you know, based off, like, jiu-jitsu tournaments and things like that. Like, all this takes away from, like, the capoeira essence, where it's just, like, a tool for liberation, you know, personal growth. Like, if I could change that and have those same people give frequent respect to the people who suffered, and less commercialization, like less, okay, every single year I'm going to have a bachizado, which the students have to pay for, so I can just make money off these belts, and like, okay, we're going to make sure that we go into low-income neighborhoods and give capoeira, you know, for free or to, you know, at a discounted price, and give back to the community instead of, like, how many events I can have to, like, make money, you know, and pocket it. That's what I would change. Because I feel like in some instances, people who are in charge are using capoeira in the same way as the people who are trying to oppress, you know, the capoeiristas in the first place. You know, that's what I would change.
What,
boom.
What do you think you would want for your school within the next 30 years?
30? Woo! Okay, 30 years. Wow. All right. I would definitely want our own space that we own, that we can call home, that we can decorate and, you know, make it feel like this is our space, you know, in the world, in the community. Having a nonprofit that would help us give classes to low-income communities, low-income families, and just help pay for things that we want to do with the community. And also having a kids project set up where I myself can, you know, be available to give classes to kids. And not just classes, but I'm saying, like, mentoring, being a role model, showing examples of, like, you know, all you have to do is... Capoeira may not be your passion, but if you take what you learn in capoeira and apply it to life, then that's my main goal. 'Cause we have a kids project. I don't want to say kids program. Kids project called Capoeira in Brazil. And there's a few that are in Lebanon and other locations that we have capoeira schools, but I definitely would like that wherever I'm going to be at in 30 years, whether it's Oakland or wherever. So those three things, our own space, a nonprofit to assist with, you know, with government-assisted funds, and a capoeira project for kids and low-income communities and families where they're actually doing, like, mentoring and can give back and do things in their own community.
Address of your school, website, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, anything you use, how to get in touch
with
you.
Cool, so again, my name is Professor Malandro.
You had to think about that for a second. It's
Ricky,
very late at night.
A.K.A. Ricky Lawson the second. So our school is Filhos de Bimba, California Bay Area School of Capoeira. Located in Emeryville, and people can find us on the interweb at capoeirabayarea.com. We're also on Instagram, Capoeira Bay Area, as well as Facebook, as well, again, you know, Capoeira Bay Area. And we also have a YouTube channel. So all those outlets, our website, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram is all the ways that people can find us. All they have to do is type in Capoeira Bay Area or just Filhos de Bimba and California. Out on all of those things, website, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube.
For doing this.
Pushies. My pleasure. Again.
Now I have to go or else get my car towed. So thank you for coming on.